Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America on Sunday, November 13th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington.
I think for the first time, African leaders and beyond the negotiating room, they are putting out very strong opinion statements about what they believe. And it's coming from a pain point of what they've witnessed at different levels.
As world leaders continue to meet in Egypt for a two-week climate change summit, COP27, African leaders emphasize the need for the West to increase its commitment to addressing the impact of climate change on the continent.
900 soldiers from Kenya arrived in Goma as members of the East African Community Regional Force. And they came with a mandate to fight against all negative forces in DRC.
Kenyan peacekeepers arrive in eastern DR Congo as part of a regional military operation targeting rebels in the region.
In addition, the two districts of Mubende and Kassanda are under quarantine. It does not mean that we are 100% sure that no case will pop up anywhere.
And Uganda's health ministry says Ebola cases are stabilizing despite reports to the contrary. Those two and more coming up on Nightline Africa. As world leaders continue to meet in Egypt for a two-week climate change summit, COP27, African leaders have been emphasizing the need for their Western counterparts to increase their commitment in addressing the impact of climate change in Africa. Nigerian President Muhammad Buhari is the latest African leader to weigh in on the issue, saying African leaders are frustrated by what he called Western hypocrisy. Timothy Abiezu speaks with experts in this report from Abuja.
The Nigerian president's op-ed for the Washington Post this week, titled How Not to Talk to Africa About Climate Change, came amid discussions by delegates at the UN Climate Change Summit to compensate poor nations for mountain damage linked to global warming. The president said Western development has unleashed climate catastrophe on Africa and that part of his nation was underwater caused by severe flooding that has affected 34 of Nigeria's 36 states and displaced 1.4 million people. Buhari also cited drought-driven famine in the Horn of Africa, wildfires across the north, and intensifying cyclones in the south as part of the consequences of climate change in Africa. Africa is the continent most affected by climate change, despite contributing only about 3% of global emissions, according to the UN. Nigeria's head of the International Climate Change Development Africa Initiative, Seifumi Adebote, says the president's charge was very timely.
I think for the first time, African leaders and beyond the negotiating room, they are putting out very strong opinion statements about what they believe. And it's coming from a pain point of what they've witnessed at different levels in their respective countries, from Nigeria to Niger to Rwanda to Kenya. You've seen African leaders come out to voice very strong opinion.
The Nigerian leader said Western governments repeatedly have failed to honor a 2009 agreement to pay $100 billion for climate adaptation and mitigation in developing nations. He said most financing currently flows toward mitigation projects such as renewable energy. Buhari admitted that Africa's future must be carbon-free, but said the continent's current energy demands cannot be met by weather-dependent solar and wind power, and that Western countries cannot dictate how African nations can use their resources for their development. The Nigerian leader stated that even if Africa used up all its reserves of natural gas, its share of global emissions would only rise from 3% to 3.5%. But program coordinator at the Social Development Center, Isaac Boti, says African leaders must stay on course with best practices for climate by embracing renewable energy sources.
For me, I feel that fossil fuel production should be stopped. And if President Buhari is saying that we should look at the energy available to us that is inimical to the reduction of climate change globally. For instance, the solar system provides the biggest option for energy production globally, particularly in Africa, considering our climatic situation.
Seyi Fumi says poor accountability also could be the reason why Africa is not getting much needed support.
We also do not have the structures to maintain or to utilize or to be accountable for the resources we get from them. It will not excite them to keep pumping money if there are no structure to process that funds or mechanisms to reflect the outcomes of what those funds are used for.
As COP27 proceeds, many are hoping the outcome of this year's climate summit will be different. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, hundreds of activists called on industrialized nations to speed up the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy on Saturday in the largest protest yet at the summit. The Associated Press reports that protests have mostly been muted at the conference known as COP27, which is taking place in the seaside resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. Activists blamed high cost of travel, accommodation, and restrictions in the isolated city for limiting numbers of demonstrators. The protesters marched through the conference's blue zone, which is considered a UN territory and ruled by international law. They chanted, sang, and danced in an area not far from where climate talks and negotiations are taking place. The protests came at the end of the week of the two-week summit, when typically protest action at climate summits is at its biggest. Kenyan soldiers landed in the city of Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo on Saturday as part of a regional military operation targeting rebels in the conflict-torn region. The arrival comes as the M23 militia has surged across the DRC's North Kivu province, capturing swaths of territory and inflaming tensions in Central Africa. Leaders of the seven-nation East African Community, bloc, agreed in April to establish a joint force to help restore security in the mineral-rich DRC. Last week, Kenya's parliament approved the deployment of just more than 900 troops to the DRC as part of the joint East African Community military force. Reporter Jaffa Alkatante tells me more about the arrival of the Kenyan troops.
900 soldiers from Kenya arrived in Goma as members of the East African Community Regional Force, and they came with a mandate to fight against all negative forces in DRC and to bring peace. That's what the spokesperson of FRDC in the North Kivu province said. And the same thing was also repeated by the commander of that force.
And what's next for the Kenyan forces? Are they joining the battle immediately, or what's going on?
They arrived today, and today there is fighting in all three front lines between FRDC and M23. But they went directly first to where they will be based before we know the next. You know, this operation is also a defense secret, so they can't share everything with media. So we will wait until their communication team will inform us about the deploying on the front line.
And how is the situation on the ground now in that area? Is the fighting still going on?
Yes, fighting still going on in three axes of Uchuru, Nyiragongo. And as yesterday, the FRDC succeeded to take the control of Mabenga Bridge in the north side of the M23 zone, but the south side is a bit complicated, and now fighting in the city of Kibumba, which is very close to Goma, just 25 kilometers north of Goma. Yesterday, a rocket landed on a house and killed all the family, an entire family, a mother with all his children.
Apart from the Kenyan forces, are there any forces about to come in the area?
We don't know their agenda, but Burundian forces are also in Uvira, in South Kivu province, and we are still waiting for South Sudanese soldiers, because the statement from the head of state of East African Community said about Kenyan, Burundian, Ugandan, and South Sudanese soldiers. So Burundian and Kenyan are the first to enter the country, and Burundian are in South Kivu, and now Kenyan came in Goma in North Kivu province.
Reporter Jaffa Alkatante, he spoke with me from Goma in Eastern DRC. Top military commanders from Ethiopia and its embattled Tigray region have agreed to allow unhindered humanitarian access to the region and form a joint disarmament committee following a truce signed about a week ago. The Associated Press reports that the commanders, who since Monday have been meeting in the Kenyan capital Nairobi, signed an agreement Saturday that they said calls for a disengagement from all forms of military activities. Both parties have agreed to protect civilians and facilitate the delivery of humanitarian aid to the region of more than 5 million people, according to a copy of the agreement seen by the Associated Press. The agreement states that disarmament will be done concurrently with the withdrawal of foreign and non-Ethiopian military forces from Tigray. In a separate statement late Saturday, Ethiopia's federal authorities said that efforts are being made to deliver humanitarian assistance to most of the Tigray region, which is under Ethiopian military command. As Uganda struggles to control the spread of the deadly Ebola virus, health ministry officials said Friday the cases are gradually stabilizing. This comes after media reports that some leaked documents showed the disease could claim 500 lives by next April. The country has recorded 137 Ebola cases and 54 deaths since the outbreak began in September. Halima Athman reports from Kampala.
Ugandan health ministry officials have gone on the defense in the face of reports the deadly Ebola Sudan virus disease is spiraling out of control. Dr. Jen Ruth Acheng, Uganda's health minister, told reporters Friday that the country's cases are gradually stabilizing, as shown by trends in the last week. An article in the British Daily Telegraph newspaper early this week reported that leaked donor documents said the ministry had projected 250 deaths by the end of this year and 500 Ebola deaths to be reported by next April. Acheng said the outbreak is being monitored closely and cases are being followed up on. She said cases in Kampala and other areas are under quarantine, apart from Kasanda district, which has made it easy for authorities to control the epidemic. The government has placed the two districts, Kasanda and Mubende, that are most affected by the Ebola outbreak under quarantine for another 21 days, although Mubende is not reporting new cases, with the government ordering an early closure of primary schools countrywide.
We have never done any modeling for this Ebola outbreak. Not Ministry of Health, not the Scientific Advisory Committee, not the National Planning Authority. So that modeling was done by them. In addition, the two districts of Mubende and Kasanda are under quarantine. It does not mean that we are 100% sure that no case will pop up anywhere.
WHO country representative Jonas Tegen at the press conference described as dramatic the projected Ebola death case numbers in the reports. Tegen said in the last week there have been 5 confirmed cases and a sharp decrease in the last 3 weeks. Tegen said he was surprised to see some wrong details claimed to have been taken from the WHO.
That's not telling us a doomsday scenario. Even in normal cases, for example, WHO puts the viral hemorrhagic kits in various places. We keep supplies enough to manage 300, 400, 500 patients. Does that mean that the disease is there? No, it is getting prepared. I would assure you that also WHO didn't do modeling. I was surprised to see a graph. Our graphs are not done like that.
Local reports also indicate there is an ongoing conflict brewing between the minister and donors over how funds to fight Ebola are being managed. U.S. Ambassador Natalie Brown at a press conference last week said since the outbreak was declared in Uganda on September 20th, the United States had channeled more than $22.3 million through implementing partners to support the government of Uganda-led Ebola response, with $6 million made directly available to the health ministry. She was quick to add and urge the proper use of these funds.
We also, appeal to everyone in government and everyone involved to really do what they can to clamp down on corruption. This costs everyone when these funds are leaking out and ending up in someone's pocket instead of reaching the communities who need the support and resources.
There is still no proof from scientists on the actual cause of the current Ebola Sudan virus disease outbreak. Last month, the health ministry indicated it had caught 189 bats and obtained 320 samples to ascertain the actual cause of the Ebola virus. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention country director, Dr. Lisa Nelson, said at the press conference the tests are ongoing.
We're interested in understanding the source of this outbreak. Why Mubende and Kasanda? This will help us in terms of preventing future outbreaks and understanding who is at risk based on the environment and based on the reservoir. What is the source of this very, very deadly infection? We do know, and there have been studies in the past, that there are bats who harbor filoviruses, including the Marburg virus.
Uganda announced the Ebola outbreak September 20th and acknowledged the disease had started claiming lives in August. Health officials report 16 admitted cases, 65 recoveries reported, and 4,147 contacts listed for follow-up, all part of the 137 cumulative cases. Halima Othmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Africa's third largest mobile communication company, South Africa's Vodacom, says it will no longer source electricity for its infrastructure, such as cell phone towers, from the state-run power regulator Eskom. Vodacom cited the long electricity outages that have hit South Africa for the past 15 years, but especially in the past month. Darren Taylor reports.
Years of corruption and mismanagement at Eskom mean critical maintenance at power stations hasn't been done and key infrastructure hasn't been built. To prevent the grid from collapsing, Eskom says it has to ration electricity. It switches power off in stages from 1 to 8, using a system it calls load shedding. For much of the past month, it's been implementing stages 4 to 6. South Africans haven't had power for between 4 and 12 hours a day.
There's so much load shedding during the day. I mean, I calculated this week, you were only getting 3.5 hours of electricity during the workday. It's just mind-boggling. And of course, what's infuriating...
Tech expert Toby Shapshak says the only surprising part of Vodacom's decision to sever ties with Eskom is that it took so long. Vodacom's one of Africa's flagship companies. It has about 125 million mobile phone and internet customers across 32 countries, with annual revenue of almost $7 billion. In South Africa, up until now, it paid Eskom to power the 15,000 base stations needed to allow citizens to make calls and use the net. But because of constant electricity breakdowns, says managing director Sito Mdlalose, Vodacom's had to spend billions of rands on batteries to keep its equipment on, albeit only for limited periods.
We've got something like 83% of our total sites sit at about 4-hour resilience, and about another 10 to 12% sit at about 8-hour resilience. And so for us, we've done that investment and we're seeing the benefit of that. But of course, it comes at a huge cost because it's not only batteries, it's deploying mobile generators. We've got about 1,300 or so generators right across the country, and we obviously move those across.
Shapshak describes what mobile phone companies have been able to achieve in South Africa since load shedding began as phenomenal.
But they are fighting against the laws of physics, just as all of us consumers are. Batteries can only last so long. You can only put so many batteries into a specific space, and they need to be recharged. And when you're on stage 6 or stage 5, what you have is not enough time to recharge the batteries. Therefore, the cellular signal degrades. I'm sure everyone else has had this experience, as I have, unable to make a phone call.
Health organizations say people suffering medical emergencies have died when calls couldn't be made because mobile networks were down. When communication systems fail, the economy also bleeds billions of dollars. Faced with dwindling profits because of the blackouts, Vodacom says it'll buy electricity from private businesses producing clean power, such as solar. So Eskom will lose one of its biggest clients, severely denting its turnover and ability to function. Shapshak expects MTN, Africa's second biggest telecommunications firm, also headquartered in South Africa, to follow its competitor's lead. He says MTN's also spent billions on batteries the past few years because of outages.
There are a whole bunch of sites, for instance, that MTN earlier this year said they're no longer viable because people keep stealing the batteries from those sites. And they, you know, the networks have to jump through even more hoops, like putting the batteries in concrete, putting them in shipping containers. I mean, these are extraneous
things. Shapshak says Eskom will lose other major buyers of its electricity soon as corporate South Africa's dissatisfaction with the state-owned enterprise peaks. President Cyril Ramaphosa has appointed a new board to try to turn Eskom around and says the corporation will also soon begin buying electricity from independent power producers to bolster its grid. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In its 85-year history, South African public broadcaster RSG has evolved with the times, adapting from supporting apartheid-era government policies to empowering a diverse audience with its Afrikaners language broadcasts. For VOA, Maurice de Klerk attended some of the station's anniversary festivities in Johannesburg.
It's quite hot. Yes, the case is busy mounting.
Afrikaners are jolly, proclaims a popular Afrikaans folk song.
We cater for anybody who speaks or understands Afrikaans, and dit is hoekom ons julle genooi.
And that is why we invited you, because we know you understand Afrikaans, says RSG's business manager Louise Uster, as the birthday party guests burst out laughing.
In boere musiek. RSG, jy sal jou ore nie glo nie.
For generations of listeners, the Afrikaans public radio station RSG is both friend and family. Today it reaches more than 1.3 million people with its shows. RSG is the oldest public radio service in an African language. Renske Jacobs, RSG's award-winning drama director, is proud of the station's boundary-pushing efforts. Her father was a station head. For her, like for many in the audience, the station is part of a shared heritage.
You get that feeling that you're broadcasting for your uncle, your aunt, your mom, your dad, your grandpa, your grandma. And if you don't do it the correct way, they will also reprimand you in that way when they send you SMSs. So that you feel like, ooh, you just disappointed one of your family members now.
The public broadcaster works under strict license requirements and a legal mandate. Afrikaans has long been associated with Afrikaners, a white minority of South Africans, many of whom used to favor segregation. Since the end of apartheid in 1994, the station, however, has become more inclusive, reflecting its diverse Afrikaans audience in South Africa and beyond.
Right. Radio Sonder Grense.
It changed its name to Radio Sonder Grense or Radio Without Borders and has survived in part by listening to its loyal audience. Terence April is a former RSG program manager.
Afrikaans is a language to keep people together. It's a very important thing, and it's also good because the people across the different racial lines and the different lifestyle lines, the language is binding them.
And the broadcaster is constantly presenting new things, acting like a university for some, says current program manager Kobus Burger.
We use audio to give people all these experience that they might not always have. In Africa, the oral tradition is so important to sit around the fire, and that's radio.
Professor Frans Kruger of the Wits Center for Journalism explains the metamorphosis RSG underwent.
The Afrikaans language radio station was, you know, very firmly in the government camp over the years, until the change in 1994. The lesson to be drawn from that is simply how powerful culture and identity is. What we're seeing now is an attempt to kind of reclaim that identity outside of its apartheid associations.
RSG is also home to U Eie Keuse, or Your Own Choice, South Africa's longest-running radio program, where listeners sent in requests to the classical music show. As RSG marks its milestone year, its listeners keep tuning in, knowing they will be heard. Marise de Klerk for VOA News in Johannesburg, South Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by music from our African collection.
Hey, football fans! FIFA's World Cup 2022 kicks off in Qatar in just a few days. Join Sonny Young and myself, Mukbil Yabaro, every weekend on Nightline Africa when we bring you On Goal with Sonny and Mukbil. We will bring you everything World Cup related. Tune in starting next Saturday at 16:05 UTC and 18:05 UTC.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's go to Abuja and join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sports in Morocco, where the finals of the 2022 CAF Women's African Champions League will be played at the Stade Prince Moulay Abdallah Rabat, Morocco, on Sunday. Host AS FAR will face defending champions Mamelodi Sundowns in the finals of the Women's African Champions League after both clubs narrowly won their semi-final ties 1-0. Mamelodi Sundowns midfielder Andisiwe Mukoye looks ahead to tonight's final.
We were here in this tournament last year, and this year we came to this tournament to show what we're capable of, like that Sundowns can play football.
In Ghana, the country's sports minister, Mustafa Usif, says the government has no plans to airlift fans to Qatar 2022 with taxpayers' money. According to the sports minister, the decision was necessitated by the current economic hardship that the country is facing.
In view of the current economic situation that we find ourselves, the government have decided that we will not be financing supporters to the World Cup. And I want to repeat that. In view of the current economic situation we have found ourselves, the government will not be using consolidated fund to fund anybody to as a supporter to Qatar.
Staying with World Cup news, the South African national senior men's football team, Banyana Banyana, is not part of the teams that will be at the FIFA World Cup, which kicks off this weekend in Qatar. However, three South Africans will be flying the country's flag in the Middle East during a football spectacle. And these are the South African Football Association's chief medical officer, Dr. Thulani Ngwenya, referee Victor Gomez, and assistant referee Zakile Ziwela. Ahead of their departure for Qatar, the Football Association had a send-off for the three men.
man. Referee Victor Gomez and assistant referee Zakile Ziwela and chief medical officer Dr. Tulani Ngweya in their various remarks said they will be worthy ambassador of South Africa and indeed the African continent.
We are going to take a flag and we are going to take it very high. We want to show the world that we Africans are also here and we are here to fight.
We're not going there only as referees, we're also going there as competitors because we want to also go and do the final just like any other referee.
It is an opportunity for me to learn. SAFA is the only African organization that has a full-time sports medicine, or rather chief medical officer. I'm quite honored and I'm humbled and I'm looking forward, excited. Hopefully, we'll come back as better people.
In athletics, the 2022 edition of the Lagos Women Run has a new champion. Masije Vera Ioana finished the 10-kilometer race in a time of 29 minutes, 38.72 seconds to win the 7th edition of the Lagos Women Run, which took place on Saturday. A record 25,000 runners registered for the 2022 edition of the Lagos Women Run. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson.
And now it's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Oh, I'm feeling tipsy. I'm feeling
casa, su casa, mi casa, su casa. Dance my casa, my casa. One little bit of my puka. Say, say you want me. Push on the dance, push on the dance, push on the, push on the, push on the dance. Push on the dance, push on the dance, push on the, push on the, push on the dance.
Tell me, say you want some. Say you want some currency. Looking for something. And it's me that you want it, girl. I pay you, see what did you say? Girl, why not keep it and replay? Me no lie, but this soft souffle that I can satisfy. Should you use girl in the dance? Girl in the dance. See you on girl, see. Girl, what you plan?
X-Men begging for a reply. I wanna take you somewhere real far out there. So better pack everything you need, or we can get them by the roadside, shawty. I'm impatient, I can wait until we leave, yeah. Oh yeah, we got it like that. And the thing that you want and the problem like that, just the recuperation that you need. For 4 weeks, we be chilling in Maldives, yeah. You know I got you through any weather. Anything at all for the four letters. Show me all your flaws and they really don't matter. I just wanna see you better.
With you, half naked by the B-side. We've been wearing by the resides. Put your waist on rewind. I wanna wake up with you. We play, no time.
African girl body like a Milo Choco. She does a Milo Choco, Choco Milo Choco, Melanie. African girl body like a Milo Choco. She does a Milo Choco, Choco Milo Choco, Melanie Choco.
She call me Kamina, she said I'm in party bula. She tell me say make a call bula, my baby say make a call bula. She want to know me from formula. I want to come in your arena. You are then the second club.
Oh, yeah. Another one this.
Godo Dompo.
Our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. From the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us, and I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.